Vayigash Elav Yehuda Vayomer Biadoni Yidaber na avdecha davar ba'ozney Adoni va'al yichar apecha be'avdecha ki chamocha kifaro. OU Israel presents
in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Vayigash. Recording and first broadcast, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the third day of Tevet, 5772. That date is an interesting date, simply because in some years, it's the last day of Hanukkah, and in other years, it's after Hanukkah, which means sometimes we say Hallel, and sometimes we say Tachanun on that day. And the only other date on the calendar that some people say Tachanun and some people say Hallel would be Yom HaTzmaut, but that's a totally different issue. This is an actual date that has a festive nature some years and a regular, mundane nature on other years. This year it's the day after Hanukkah. We sort of have that feeling that Hanukkah was over even the night before, even though it wasn't. You light candles at night, and by the next morning, except for davening, you don't feel Hanukkah during the day because you're no longer anticipating candle lighting that night. Okay. Parshat Vayigash is 90% of the time immediately after Hanukkah, and the other 10%, it's the one after that, with Miketz in that rare situation not being Shabbat Chanukah. One way or the other, we might take a retrospective look to the Chanukah just past, or we might dwell on Vayigash and probably some combination of the two. First, Psalm 130, Tehillim Kuf Lamed. Shir Hama'alot Mima'amakim Karaticha Adonai. Adonai Shima V'Koli, Tihyena oznecha kashuvot lekol tachanunai. Imavonot tishmor yo Adonai mi ya'amod, ki imacha hasalicha lema'an tivarei. Ki viti Adonai kivita nafshi, velidvoro hocholti. Nafshi l'Adonai, mi shomerim laboker, shomerim laboker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai, ki im Adonai hachesed v'harbe imo fedut. Vehu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael, hanetunim batzara uvashivya, haomedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, hamakom yirachem aleihem viyotziyem mitzara lirvacha umeafela l'ora, umishibud l'geula, hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv v'nomar amen. That last prayer is for Jews in trouble anywhere they are. The one that comes to mind first, just because of the absurdity of the length of time he has spent in prison, is Jonathan Pollard, and we've started in the last number of weeks just reminding people of how long he's been in jail. 9,534 days. It's an incredibly long time. There are many people who haven't lived that long, and those who have, it's still a long period of time. And we hope that the powers that be, given a little push by the power that is, will finally get over their hang-up and let him out. He deserved release a long, long time ago, and he deserves to be treated as a Jewish hero, which he is. The opening of the show was a little piece of a clip from an old TV series, and we'll make it a contest. Those who have the answer to where it comes from, please let me know at tt@ou.org, tt for Torah Tidbits, at ou.org, and you can win a CD. With that said, let's take a look at the Parsha, Vayigash, and let's look at it from the first verse, which I read earlier in the show. Vayigash elav Yehuda. Yehuda, one of the brothers, the leader among the brothers, approaches Yosef. Unknown to him that it is Yosef, he thinks it's the viceroy of Egypt, which Yosef was. Vayomer, and he says to him, Bi Adoni, Yedaber na avdecha davar b'nei Adoni, ba'oznei Adoni, Sir, please, or now, let me speak into your ear, so to speak. Va'al yichar apecha b'avdecha, and do not be angry with me, ki chamocha kifaro, because you are have the status like a pharaoh. Now, at the end of last week's Sedra, we had an amazing cliffhanger. It's, I think, one of only two in the whole Torah, where the brothers have expressed among themselves regret for what they had done to Yosef, and they seem to be turning over a new leaf, and they now have Binyamin, the youngest brother that this leader in Egypt has demanded they bring, otherwise they would be accused of being spies. And at the very end, Yosef plants his special chalice in Binyamin's bag. After the brothers leave, Yosef sends somebody after them and accuses them of stealing his chalice. Yehuda had made the bold statement, impossible that any of us should have done such a thing to you and repay your kindness with this terrible act. If you find it among somebody's possessions, that person should be put to death, and the rest of us will be your slaves forever. Yosef says, hey, don't exaggerate, the one in whose possession I find it, he will be my slave, and the rest of you could go free. They search from the oldest to the youngest, and they find it, of course, in Binyamin's possessions. And Yehuda is dumbfounded at the beginning, and he sort of restates his offer without the killing Binyamin part, and he says, I don't know how this happened, but we'll all be your slaves. And Yosef, on purpose, magnanimously says, no, just the culprit will be my slave. The rest of you could go free home to your father. That's where it stands at the end of Parshat Miketz. At the beginning of Vayigash, we see a different Yehuda. Yehuda is no longer contrite, resolved to his fate, almost meek in front of this leader of Egypt. He goes from a sheep to being a lion, which is the hallmark of Yehuda. He is the Lion of Judah. The question is, what changed between the end of Miketz and the beginning of Vayigash, aside from the fact that they now knew that Binyamin is in trouble? That obviously is part of the answer, but the Alshich, one of the commentators on Torah, has a beautiful answer. He says, all the time when Yehuda and the brothers were anticipating being in trouble, being enslaved in Egypt, they saw it as punishment, as their fate for what they had done to Yosef. And they were resolved to it, and they were not really going to fight it. What happens? All of them are told, go home to your father, you're free. Only Binyamin will stay as a slave in Egypt. Yehuda says to himself, Binyamin, he was the only one of my brothers that did not participate in the sale of Yosef, in all the terrible things with Yosef. So if he's the only one to be punished and not us, then this is not punishment. We don't have to be resigned to it and resolved to it. And he stands up and argues for Binyamin in a beautiful way. The feelings, the emotion that Yehuda expresses to Yosef bring tears to your eyes, and more than that, brought a flood of tears to Yosef's eyes. And he could not keep up his charade any longer, and he shortly reveals himself to his brothers. But I want to go back to one little point, not so little, in Yehuda's pitch. I don't know if that's the best word, to Yosef. He speaks of v'nafsho kishura v'nafsho, that Yaakov, their father, and Binyamin have a very special relationship where their souls are intertwined. And if anything happens to Binyamin, it'll kill Yaakov. But listen to what Yehuda is saying. He is talking about his father having a special feeling and relationship with one of Rachel's sons, where years before, 22 or so to be specific, years before, when Yehuda and his brothers saw that Yaakov favored Yosef, the other one of Rachel's sons, they were jealous and hated him. And Yehuda is now talking in love, with love for Binyamin and for their father, and the jealousy does not show at all. That is definitely remarkable, and that is an indicator of true repentance. So there is that uplifting element in this confrontation between Yehuda and Yosef. Unfortunately, I have more to say about it, which is not in the uplifting direction, but we'll get there. In the meantime, what I would like to do is, having played Hanukkah stuff the last couple of weeks, we're past Hanukkah, we're approaching Shabbat. Shabbat is with us every week. This show is an Erev Shabbat, Shabbat preparing kind of show. That's why it was moved a long time ago to Thursday, and a lot of people listen to it on Friday. And I am in a sort of retro mood. I came across a recording that I have of Suki and Ding album called Encore, which has a lot of melodies from the 60s, including a Shabbos medley. I would like to play one piece of it about what we say in Birkat HaMazon on Shabbat. HaRachaman Hu Yanchilenu Yom Shekulo Shabbat Umenucha L'Chaye Olamim. May the Merciful One grant us a total Shabbat, a day of rest and peace forever. Rabbi Sons, redone with the Suki and Ding album. I don't really know the title of it. It could be Yom Shekulo Shabbat. It could be Horachaman. I remember it fondly because I was personal friends with some of the rabbi's sons, and they were very, very big at the time that I was listening to a lot of music. I shouldn't say that. I listen to a lot of music all the time. In any event, this will give us not just the Shabbat mood, but the good old Shabbat mood for those in nostalgia. By the way, I forgot to mention that anyone who sends me an email on the openers of the show, which sometimes are competition, I would like to ask you also to include your age, because I think that is a good indicator of who gets these things and from what period they came from. In the meantime, enjoy the song, and then we'll continue more on the Sedra and maybe a little bit of Hanukkah retrospect.
Shabbos Menuchah Orachamon Uyanchileinu Yom Shekulo Shabbos Menuchah Orachamon Uyanchileinu Yom Shekulo Shabbos Menuchah Menuchah Orachamon Yom shekulo shabbos u'menucha, lechayei lechayei olamim. Yom shekulo shabbos u'menucha, lechayei olamim. Yom shekulo shabbos u'menucha. Yom shekulo shabbos u'menucha. Orachamon u'yanchileinu. Yom shekulo shabbos u'menucha. Yom shekulo shabbos u'menucha.
The original of that song was done by one singer, I think in four or five different voices and voiceovers and things like that, and it was a very, very special kind of song at the time, and still is. It encapsulates the feeling for Shabbat. Okay, back to Yosef and his brothers. I want to skip over their meeting and hugging and kissing and reconciliation, because there's a bittersweet element here, and we can't avoid it. The problems with Yosef and his brothers were shown to us back in Parshat Vayeshev, and the result of Yosef's being down in Egypt continued into Miketz, and the engineering of getting the whole family down to Egypt continues into Vayigash. And Yosef tells his brothers who he is. They can't believe it. He proves it to them. And they're mortified but delighted that he's still alive and that he wants to talk to them. And this is the part that I wanted to skip over, so I'm not going to continue. But I want to jump to the Haftorah. The Haftorah, I think, brings us back to a reality. It's nice, it's beautiful, the way the brothers and Yosef interact, and Yaakov as well, when he comes down with the rest of the family. And yet the Haftorah that is chosen for Parshat Vayigash deals with the prophecy to Yechezkel, where he's told to take two sticks and write on one of the sticks Yehuda and on the other Ephraim, representing Yosef, representing the 10 tribes. The kingdom split into basically Yehuda, Binyamin, and Levi on one side and the other 9 tribes on the other, who disappeared earlier than the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash. And that split of the kingdom represented the original enmity between Yosef and his brothers, or the brothers towards Yosef. It's the individuals, the way the Torah is telling us about them, and it is the whole nation for a very serious piece of time. So God tells Yechezkel to take these two sticks and hold them together, and they fuse and they merge, and it's a prophecy for the future of the reconciliation of the tribes and the reunification of the Jewish people in the land of Israel. Hasn't happened yet. Hold that thought. We'll be right back with Torah Tidbits Audio. You are listening to Torah Tidbits Audio for Parshat Vayigash. We were just talking about the Haftarah and the fact that the echoes, strong echoes in Jewish history, of the problems between brothers and brothers continued and continues. And only a prophecy of the time of Mashiach will there be a full reconciliation. Now, I think we could look today at religious versus non-religious, Ashkenazim and Sfardim, Hasidim and Mitnagdim, this group of Hasidim and that group of Hasidim, this approach, that approach, Orthodox, Conservative, Reform. There are so many divisive elements in the Jewish world, and many of them echo of the hatred, I hate to use the word, of the brothers for Yosef, and drastic moves like throwing Yosef into a deep pit that had snakes and scorpions in it. And today it's not exactly like that, but it's frightening. I don't even want to dwell upon it. The most recent media coverage is the ultra-Orthodox versus who knows who in Beit Shemesh. But there are things all over the place. There are certainly nice approaches that some people take towards others who are different from them, but there's a lot of nastiness there. And it means that the friction, tension, enmity between Yosef and his brothers is sadly alive and well. We have not learned our lesson properly. And we have to work on it. And I don't mean to paint a totally gloomy picture. I think that your Kiruv movement, many different facets of it, who are trying with love to bring fellow Jews closer to God and closer to Torah, not forcing things down their throat, certainly not spitting on them when they don't match up to the standards that other people have. It's all part of that picture. And even though there's one more sedra to the book of Bereshit, the book of Bereshit does not end in a nice, happily ever after way. It ends with the people in Mitzrayim. The beginning of Shemot speaks of their enslavement. And it's a long time till they get back to a decent level. And sadly, they don't stay there. We've had our ups and downs throughout Jewish history. We have to learn lessons so that the ups are more frequent and the downs will disappear. But it's a long, long process. But we have to be in that process. Maybe enough said, maybe not, I'm not sure. But let's finish this piece at least with another part of that Shabbat medley. This is the song, also from the Rabbi's Sons, also from the 60s, from Psalm 92, which is Mizmor Shir Liyom HaShabbat, a psalm, a song for the Sabbath day. The words of this song are the second and third verses. Tov lehodot l'Hashem, it is good to thank God, and sing psalms to your name, Most High, to tell of your loving kindness in the morning and your faithfulness at night. Tov lehodot l'Hashem.
Oh.
Tov Lahodot, which, as I mentioned, comes from Psalm 92. Psalm 92 is the Shir Shel Hayom, the Psalm of the Day of Shabbat. It is also part of Kabbalat Shabbat, the Friday night services. In fact, according to many opinions, it is that point in the service where the act of Kabbalat Shabbat takes place, accepting upon oneself the Shabbat. Let me broaden this for a moment and give you a whole picture. A woman, when she lights Shabbat candles, specifically women in the Ashkenazi communities, developed the practice that their lighting of Shabbat candles accepts upon themselves the Shabbat. Remember that we're talking about candlelighting time, which is either 18 minutes, 20 minutes, 22 minutes before sunset. And in Yerushalayim, the minhag is 40 minutes before sunset. And Ma'ale Adumim and Petach Tikva follow the Yerushalayim time. Whatever it is, it's a certain number of minutes before the actual deadline that marks between the weekday and Shabbat. So, even though originally the mitzvah to light Shabbat candles, which by the way is a rabbinic command, doesn't mean you shouldn't follow it, it's just I'm telling it to you like it is. Originally, this was an act close to the beginning of Shabbat, in honor of Shabbat, specifically since you can't light fire on Shabbat itself, and therefore that which you do before the Shabbat, for the Shabbat, is a way of giving Shabbat honor. It also has the element of Oneg Shabbat, the enjoyment of Shabbat, that there should be light in your homes on Friday night rather than walking around in the dark and tripping over things. And it enhances the feeling of Shalom Bayit, peace in the house. And even in our time when our homes are illuminated by electric lights, one should not lose sight of the fact that that is part of the mitzvah. Even though we still follow the tradition and light candles, or some people use olive oil, we still light up our homes whichever way we do, and that becomes part of the mitzvah of Ner Shabbat. That means that when a person, I'm ending up telling you more than I originally planned, but we'll see where it goes. That means that when a person turns on the lights in the house that are going to stay on, or sets a Shabbat clock to leave the light in the living room on until 11 p.m., or leave the light in the bedroom on until 10, or leave the bathroom light on the whole Shabbat, or shut off this light and sets the house lighting the way he wants it for Shabbat, that is part of the mitzvah, and therefore one should have that in mind. It is still to the woman of the house, and if there is no woman of the house, a man has to light candles. It's a mitzvah that applies to men and to women, but women have traditionally taken the lead in the performance of this mitzvah, but it applies to men as well. The act of lighting was not meant originally, as I started to say before, to be the taking of Shabbat. It was merely the honoring of Shabbat and setting up in motion the enjoyment of the evening to the light of the candles and whatever else is on in the house. Somewhere along the way, the across-the-board Ashkenazi women used candlelighting as their act of Kabbalat Shabbat, accepting the Shabbat, which is a very special thing and a beautiful thing, because God places Shabbat upon us when the sun sets on Friday until the stars come out on Saturday. We have that special ability and therefore a charge to take some of our weekday and sanctify it and tack it on to Shabbat. It's called Tosefet Shabbat. And when a person, a woman, lights candles and with that act takes upon Shabbat, and she's doing this at 4:10 in Yerushalayim, when the sun doesn't set until 4:50, then she has taken 40 minutes of her secular time, her profane, her mundane time, and sanctified it and made it part of Shabbat. That's a beautiful, beautiful thing to do. What about the rest of us who don't light Shabbos candles? Well, we have the prayer called Kabbalat Shabbat, and in Kabbalat Shabbat is this Mizmor Shir Liyom HaShabbat, Psalm 92. And that becomes an act of Kabbalat Shabbat on behalf of the man who is davening Kabbalat Shabbat in Arvit. Only problem is, in almost all shuls that I've ever known about, you don't get up to Mizmor Shir Liyom HaShabbat until it's after sunset. And therefore, you did not take from your secular time and make it sacred. Shabbat came upon you, not by your act of accepting it, but by the clock that said, Shkia, sunset. And therefore, we're missing out. I'm saying, Ashkenazi men who don't light candles, or anybody who doesn't light candles, and take Shabbat with that act, is missing out on this concept of Tosefet Shabbat, of adding from his own time and making it holy. Therefore, there is a recommendation that before, right after Mincha, before beginning Kabbalat Shabbat, when hopefully it's still not yet sunset time, that a person should say, Hareini Mekabel Olai, I hereby accept upon myself, Kiddushat Shabbat, the sanctity of Shabbat. That act, that statement, is, like the Ashkenazi woman's lighting of candles, an act of Kabbalat Shabbat. And then we too can have added from our time to the sanctity of Shabbat. It sounds like a little thing. It may sound to some of you like I'm nitpicking, but I think it's a very important idea, because on Chagim, the festivals, the way they were done originally, we, the Jewish people, through the act of Sanhedrin and declaring the month and what day is Rosh Chodesh, we brought about our festivals. But Shabbat is something that God brings upon us without our act. We do not accept Shabbat that makes it Shabbat. The time on the clock, actually the time of sunset, is what makes it Shabbat. And that means that the only thing we can do to make it our participation as well is to bring it in a little bit early. And we need to make a declaration, unless we're lighting candles, and with that act, the declaration is not necessary to be made. I think I'll leave it at that, and I hope I made the point. So this Psalm 92, where the song came from, is part of the Friday night davening, and it is the Psalm of the day of Shabbat day, and it also happens to be one of the Psalms we say in the Pesukei Dezimra section of Shacharit, between Baruch Sho'amar and Yishtabach. And it's one of the added psalms for Shabbat and Yom Tov, more than we say on a regular weekday. So it's a very significant chapter of Tehillim, of Psalms 92, and that's the story. Jumping back to Parshat Vayigash, we find when Yaakov finally is heading down towards Egypt, the Torah tells us the names of the leaders of the entourage, namely Yaakov and his sons and their children. spouses are not numbered here. They came along. And we are told that Yaakov came down to Egypt with 70 souls. These are the, as I said, the sons of Yaakov, their sons, and interestingly, there are a few, not many, a few females that get into this list. First is Dinah, daughter of Yaakov. She is among the 70. So is Serach, the daughter of Asher, listed among the 70. And Serach is a very important individual because to her is attributed extreme longevity. We don't know exactly how many years she lived, but she went down to Egypt with Yaakov and the family. She survived during the entire period of enslavement and redemption. So she was the first-hand reporter of the whole process, where all the other people who came out of Egypt had only what their parents and grandparents and great-grandparents might have told them. Serach represents a certain continuity, but she is one of two females listed among the 70. In addition to the family of Yaakov that went down, Yosef, who already was in Egypt, is counted, as are his sons, Menashe and Ephraim. Now, if you do the math, you find out that the names that are named, including the two females that I mentioned, total, including Yosef and his sons, 69. There's still that 70th person missing. And our tradition is that that 70th was another female, namely Yocheved, daughter of Levi, future mother of Miriam, Aharon, and Moshe Rabbeinu. So if we take that tradition, then among the 70 are three females, and it's noteworthy since females are not usually counted in a census. The census focuses on men of military age, so children and women don't get into the count. And we just estimate, like 600,000 came out of Egypt. Actually, it was 603,550 who came out of Egypt. But if you add women and children, we're talking about a population of 2 to 3 million people. In any event, noteworthy that among the 70 souls that came down to Egypt with Yaakov are Dinah, mentioned in the Pasuk, Serach bat Asher, mentioned specifically, and Yocheved, according to our tradition, was born on the way down to Egypt and is counted as one of the 70 souls. I do not have time for my Hanukkah retrospective, or whatever you call it, but I will say the following. Part of the Hanukkah story, which I expressed maybe 2 weeks ago, it was also a friction between Jew and fellow Jew. It was not just the enemy from the outside whom we were fighting. There was infighting as well. Maybe we should Hellenize. Maybe it's time to get rid of these traditions that are bogging us down and making us different from other people. No, we have to keep the faith and keep it at all costs. Maybe we should go into secret and hiding in order to do the practices of Judaism. No, we have to be bold and we have to confront, etc., etc. A difficult period. And it didn't end there. It continues and continues and continues. Different forms of Yosef and his brothers throughout Jewish history. May it be God's will, and with his help, that we should finally, finally pull our act together and unify for the common cause of moving towards that more pleasant, idealistic period of the Messianic era, speedily in our time. On that note, I wish you Shabbat Shalom, Lehishtameah.